Hey, ladies in the place, I'm calling out to ya.
Never was a city kid truer or bluer.
Got more beats than you'll ever know.
Because I got more hits than Sadahara O.
Just like that. What's up, everybody? What's up, what's up, what's up, OG5? Welcome to another episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. These two dickheads didn't know I've been recording for like the last 15 minutes. I'm just blowing tape early because so many times I've gotten 10 minutes in the podcast like, oh, fuck, I'm only recording video. I didn't hit record on Audition or vice versa where I'm only getting audio but no video. But no, I started this shit like 20 minutes ago. So actually 14 minutes and 4 seconds to be precise. But that's usually the average listening time of our show anyhow. So hey, from here on out, it's just the three of us. What's going on, fellas?
What's up, buddy?
What's up, homie?
What's shaking?
Oh, nothing much. Oh,
what's shaking, bacon?
What's going on, giggity giggity? You guys are talking about a long week. So my garage door opener has been kind of a dick to me for a while. And prior to one of my springs blowing out for the second time, I guess maybe it's all the power outages it's lived through in the last 6 years. It is not plugged up to a power surge protector. Obviously, most of them aren't. They're just plugged into the goddamn ceiling. My logic board went out. Now, when your logic board goes out, what that does is it prevents you the ability to tell it when to start and stop at what distance and height. And so through finagling and programming, I was able to get my garage door shut, but to leave about 8 inches of gap. Fuck it. It's good enough. When the initial blowout happened, it hit the floor, kept on trucking, and blew out the fucking little pulley at the end of the line. But hey, Amazon's a wonderful thing. Got a new pulley for $9. Most people would have bought a $200 garage door opener. Not this guy. Fuck it, we're going the cheap route. So I replaced the pulley on it, rechained it up, and kind of finagled it. Still got that 8-inch air gap. Then my spring blew out for the second time in my garage door. They came, replaced the screen, the spring, and I guess as per their procedure, they usually reprogram your garage door while you're there. So they're fucking with it. Why won't this? I said, I think the logic, I said, it's got a beep code. I looked it up about 6 months ago. The logic board's burnt out. So, whatever, it continued working. We went with it. 5-inch air gap, 8-inch air gap. My air gap's getting smaller every time I re-say that sentence because my memory's so bad. But what happened was, apparently my power went out again a few days ago, and Carrie came home and said the garage door was acting like an asshole again. Well, it came down another time because the logic board fucking blew another pulley. At this point, I said, fuck it. Fool me once. So I bought a new garage door opener. It was delivered Monday. Plan for Tuesday was to come home, install a garage door opener, and move on with my life. But Carrie picked up the pup at my work, got home, and I got a text message. Hey, fucker, it's 80 degrees in our house.
Oh, no.
Check to make sure we didn't forget to turn the air conditioner on after, because we've been sleeping with the windows open when it's getting down like 63 at night. Why not save some money? No, it's on. It's supposed to be 74 in here. It's 82. Fuck. This is 4 o'clock on a Tuesday. Got two options. I can go home and fuck with this thing and then call late night some air conditioner company to get fucking raped on super late after service fees. Or call somebody at 3:59 on Tuesday and hope I don't get hit with a last minute scheduling fee. Anyhow, get somebody out here. They get out here before I'm home from work. I get home. Apparently a lizard or two had a nice sex romp on my capacitor, and at some point one of them's body part managed to hit the positive and the negative and fucking blew the damn thing up. Killed both of them. So the young cat, new cat, we all complain no one wants to work. Here's a new cat trying to learn a trade. He swaps out the capacitor. Air handler kicks on. Outside kicks on. It's not blowing cold. What the fuck? I tell him, check the freon. No, this is before I get home. I'm on the phone with Kerry. He's doing something with the thermostat. Takes the thermostat off the wall. The battery's dead in it. It loses power. I'm driving home. He's got grease all over our wall from where he took the thermostat off. I'll deal when I get home. He wants to know if we have AA batteries. Huh? Yeah, apparently the thermostat batteries. I said, well, the thermostat battery is just a backup. It runs off of the, like, 12 volts from back foot from this. He said he needs batteries. okay, well, I'm almost to Lowe's. Do I need to stop and get batteries? No, I was like, do I need to stop and get batteries? Nah, he found some. He still can't get the... Okay, I'm by Lowe's. Do I need to stop and buy a fucking thermostat? He should have a thermostat in the truck. But no, he said he has a thermostat in the truck. Okay. Get home. He's outside testing this, testing that. I'll save you guys fucking 2.5 hours worth of labor. He's finally looking at my air handler in the garage, and he's on FaceTime with a supervisor or somebody because this thing's kicking his ass. And I asked him, I said, is this thing kicking your ass? And he said, yeah. I wasn't being annoyed yet, but it was growing into bad. I was taking notes. So he's up there, my air handler, standing on my one of my World War II crates. And so I get up behind him with my light, and I'm shining my light in there. And his boss says, oh, hold on, go back to that relay. Fucking, because I was standing there with a flashlight, I provided enough light for young Timmy so that his supervisor through FaceTime could see that the relay on the right had fucking blown out. So at this point, I'm already building my new garage door up, and I said, fuck it, well, I'm keeping an eye on this kid. I'm going to get some shit done. So he's in there with the fucking iPhone and NASA all working together to figure out why I have no AC, and I'm here trying to reconstruct a brand new garage door opener on my floor. So they replaced the relay. I said, do me a favor, while you're here, check the Freon, because I'd hate to have to pay another service fee in 4 months with my Freon. Freon checks out great. Thing's blowing cold. I said, do me a favor. I said, do yourself a favor. He's like, what's that? I said, get yourself some cotton wipe shop towels and keep them in your truck. You know what he said to me? Oh, why? For the grease on the wall? The fucker knew. He knew he got grease on my wall. And I was like, yeah, that's a bad look. I'll go in there and clean it off. And he's like, well, let me wrap everything up and we'll get billed out here. I said, do me a solid. He's like, what's that? I said, why don't you call your supervisor and tell him to start billing me from 5:30. I said, from like 4:30 to like 4:45, and then from like 5:15 to 5:30, block that shit out just from 5:30. He's like, oh, I'm not going to charge you for me chasing my tail. I said, that's cool. I said, look, I said, people want to complain no one wants to work. You got to learn. People have to learn shit. That's fine. I don't mind you learning how to do your job on my air conditioner. I'm just not going to pay for your education. So,
yeah.
For considering I called them at like fucking $359 and they replaced the two parts, it was like $230 to get back in air conditioning. So I was like, fuck it. I was happy about it. Got it done. Didn't get the garage door opener finished. And then, so I put the new one up yesterday, put the door panel on, but I was trying to cheat it. Not because I don't have the parts, but because I don't want to spend the time. So I went ahead and rewired the new one with the old sensors on the bottom for the old one. Not compatible. I was like, fuck. So I'll do that tomorrow. So here's today. I came home, made dinner, was planning on swapping the eyes out on this fucking thing. So I'm finally get the garage opener done, but no, I had to come in and do a podcast. But it's like, so I got a 3-day-old garage to install outside. Definitely don't hire me to come put in your genie. Ah,
well, you had a hell of a week.
Yeah. And then, but yeah, making stickers and all that stuff. Something else happened. I can't remember what it is. It's not a big deal. But how are you guys? What's going on in your world?
Well, we had an air conditioning issue too at mom-in-law's house. Fortunately, we know AC people.
I did too. I had been doing one for a company. I just didn't name them because I used to do their computers. And once again, it was a new guy. But yeah, so what was their turmoil?
Well, it was probably the worst day ever because my father-in-law had 4 heart attacks Monday night into Tuesday morning. And we had just all gotten back from the hospital after, you know, she had to make the call to unplug him.
Sorry to hear that, man. That's a rough trip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a brutal day. It really was. And then we get back to the house and the AC's not working because, yeah, who knows? The yard guy might have kicked a rock up into it or something mowing. But it was low on Freon and had frozen up. But fortunately, my wife works for a company with an air conditioning division, so we were able to get somebody out there pretty quick and get it settled. But
talking about getting the bins, you're spending hours in an environment that's set to a freaking refrigerator, and then you get home and you have no electricity. And it's hotter than shit.
Yeah, and then plus we had like 10 people in there, in their double wide, so it was like a hot box full of super hot people.
Yeah.
And it was just, it just wasn't any good. And then the water meter broke. So
what's the R rating on a trailer?
Water off too. Yeah. Yeah, it was a bad, bad day.
What's the R rating on a double wide trailer when it comes to that insulation in the hot Florida sun?
Well, it was built in 1978.
Okay,
or so like
the insulation
that,
so. Has long since broken down. You just got all the air gaps in between your walls and your exterior.
Yeah, it's like you know how you hear those stories of the people they sneak across the border in the semi trailers.
Yeah,
I think it's probably about that hot.
Just buy like three cases. Just buy three cans a week for an entire year of expanding foam, and just go there and drill a little hole at the bottom of the wall in between each section. Just slowly fill that thing up with expanding foam.
With my luck, the wall panels would fall off on the inside, and I'd have to figure out how to put them back up.
If that worked, you know how quiet the inside of that fucking trailer would be.
Oh my goodness!
Be like a perfect recording studio.
Would be amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
So, here's a funny story we can all relate to. This is so Gen X. This is like the example of the difference between our generation and the newer generation. So I walk up to Publix, okay? So it's me on this side of the glass. Next to me is a employee on lunch, but he hasn't showed up yet. I'm just setting the table because there's a lot of characters in this story. Okay? We're going to call him Bob. Across from me on the other side making sandwiches, you have a guy named Alexander who's probably about 24, and then you got an old lady we'll call Sheila who's probably 52. So she's our age-ish. Bob walks up to Alexander, and I'm getting my sub, and they're making their subs, and Bob says something after being there for 4 or 5 minutes. Bob has a tie on, so I guess he's a person of privilege at Publix. And Alexander on the other side is like, so we'll call him Steve because I didn't get his name. So Alexander says to Bob, so I saw Steve getting ready to walk into the break room the other day, and he walked in the door and saw you and spun around on his heels and walked out. So I went and asked Bob later, hey, what's going on between you and Steve? Something going on between the two of you? Bob explained to Alexander that Steve had done something to Bob that offended him, and he went to management about it, and he was afraid that Bob was going to crawl up his ass for it. Now, Bob just, okay, pretend like he didn't know what the fuck Alexander was talking about. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. So me and Sheila are putting more together. Alexander goes for another fucking lap on this story. Same thing. So at this point, it's like, okay, Alexander's like trying to get in with the cool kids, right? He tells his whole story again, but at the end he says, you didn't hear it from me, though. To which point Sheila said, I heard it. I heard it all. Now, me being fucking me, I said, I heard every goddamn word of it. Alexander's a shit starter. And we all had a good laugh, but Alexander started to process what he had said and what he had done. He's feeling a little guilty about it, right? Self-reflection, the motherfucker and all. He's like, well, I'm not exactly a shit starter. I said, hey, you don't have to explain yourself to me. Just keep in mind, snitching on a snitch is still a snitch. And then Charlene says, you know what happens to snitches, don't you? Because she's our age. And then me and Bob at the same time said, no, Alexander says snitches get stitches, and me and Bob said at the same time and wind up in ditches, to which they all started laughing. But then I threw in because they act like a bunch of punk ass bitches. Now Alexander's feeling real bad. He starts to backpedal. I said, hey man, it's all good. I'm just a customer. I don't work around here. I got my food and left. But it's like, in all seriousness, it's like, okay, clearly Alexander likes fucking Bob. Now he's here to throw Steve under the bus, trying to get Steve and Bob going. And because Bob didn't have a response to Steve snitching on him, he has to go for round two. He's like, dude, fucking knock it off. If Bob did say that to you, or Steve said that to you, keep it between you and fucking Steve and go about your day. Why are you getting involved in other people's shit? You're a fucking shit stir. Knock that off.
Oh, my goodness.
But where do you guys come in at throwing people under the bus like that just to gain some social clout?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that You know, you need to air your dirty laundry. Like, I would never put my people in a situation where we're talking about that with a customer.
But I mean, in this case, it wouldn't be you and your management. This is an underling coming to you, trying to brown nose you. If you and Mike were both working together and saying, hey, Steve told me Mike said this about you. He was like trying to gain brownie points and Bob wasn't playing along with it. So he went for lap two.
Ah, I gotcha.
Yeah, so he went around for lap two because he wasn't getting the response that he was hoping to get. I mean, I said it in jest, but there's kind of some truth to it. It's like, look, there's some certain things you got to snitch on people about. You fucking witness a murder, someone's house gets robbed. That's one thing. But stupid, petty shit like that, perfect story where the code saved my ass. When I worked at CompUSA, I worked with this guy named John. And John and I went out to the Buddha one night. And we got shit-faced drunk at the Buddha. And John got a hankering for some fucking Denny's. Now, we all know where the Denny's is out in Summerlin, right? Out by Fort Myers Beach?
Yep.
John says, hey, I'm driving the Denny's. Let's roll. So I hop in John's, his Isuzu Amigo at the time.
Ooh.
And we're rolling down. This is, God, 2005, 2006. So
showing your age again.
Hey, at this point, the what do they call that? The amount of time before a crime is no longer valid? The
The statute of limitations
clearly up on this story. So when you're heading from McGregor up Summerlin, right before you get to Denny's, there used to be like, you know how whenever they start to develop a neighborhood, they'll like kind of build the driveway, but then they stop and it's just open field. They preemptively built when they're putting in the curb and the sidewalk. If they know there's a lot there that may potentially sell out a commercial area, they'll put the little driveway in. Well, that had happened. John was may or may have not been drinking. And so he pulls into there and realizes it and says, fuck. Now, John, being a practical person and realizing what he has, he starts calculating in his head, is it worth it to me to try to back out on fucking busy-ass Summerlin? Or put this bitch from four-wheel drive, drive through the empty lot, up over the shrubs, and into the parking lot of Denny's where we could be safe? He opts for option two, and so we're in four-wheel drive. We're driving through the empty field, up over the shrubs, and as we're driving through the empty field, we cast our eyes to the left and see a cop driving down Summerlin. He sees us, flips on his lights. We get up over the shrubs, park around back. By the time he gets down to the street, hangs the right, comes up, hangs another right, comes back, Denny's is still on the ball that John and I are in the Denny's. We've already been seated, and we already have a menu in our hand and glasses of water in front of us. The place is fucking packed. It's like 1:30 in the morning on a Saturday. We sit down. Cop finally gets, he walks inside, just like out of a fucking movie. Walks in the dining room. Can I have everyone's attention, please? We saw you in the red truck. We know what you're doing. Come outside so we can have a talk. Now, we're the last two motherfuckers through the door in a crowded-ass dining room full of 20- and 30-year-olds. No one said a fucking word. John and I are looking at each other like, we know we saw two drivers. John, like, drinking our water, looking at her. He walks outside, gets in his car, backs his car up, and sits behind John's truck. The kids next to us say, what the fuck do you guys do? Like, nothing, man. I don't know what he's talking. No, seriously, you guys are the last ones through the door. What? Nothing. That cop, we got our food. That cop sat out there. He's staking us out. And John's like, he's not fucking leaving. I said, what do you want to do? John's like, let's get rides. John calls home, gets his dad. I call a friend of mine, which I don't have a whole lot of down here at the time. John's dad comes, gets him because he lives off McGregor, picks him up, and they leave. Person come pick me up, it was like 45 minutes late. So I walk across the parking lot. Cop's like, aren't you going to take your truck? I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, I've been sitting out here waiting on you. Aren't you going to get your truck? I pulled the keys out of my pocket. Said, I drive a Firebird. I don't know what you're talking about. I get in her truck. He goes, well, tell your buddy that we're on to him. We're going to tow his truck. We went home. Everything's cool. Next day, his truck was still there because it was private property. But yeah, because those kids knew the rules and they didn't snitch on us, we avoided a fucking DUI and destruction of property. But they could have easily thrown us under the bus on that. But everybody knew the code. Fucking keep your mouth shut. Luckily, we weren't in a room full of Karens. Snitches get stitches.
That's for sure.
Yep, yep, yep. So what story you guys want to kick off tonight with?
Doesn't matter to me.
Why don't you take it, Morgan?
All right, well, let's talk about Hall & Oates. So apparently, John Oates is done. He is over Hall & Oates, and he's going to take his ball and go home.
Over here, pick me.
Yes, Don.
Hall & Oates was still to fucking together. Are they playing Branson, Missouri? I mean, who knew? When's the last time you seen somebody say, "Boy, I can't wait till Friday. Hall & Oates is coming to town."
Well, you know, I'm old enough where if I had a chance to go see him in concert, I would. My wife got to go probably 5-6 years ago, and she still hasn't let me forget that she got to go and I didn't. When I'm the, you know, I'm the music lover in the family, and she's like, "Yeah, my friend got tickets, and I'm going to go, and you don't get to." And I'm like, "Well, what are we, like 6?
Yeah,
I mean, come on." Yeah.
You know, Gordon had a snowboard, a Burton snowboard in the early 2000s. It said Hall & Oates, but it said Hall & like you're hauling ass, and then Oates like oatmeal. So it just said Hall & Oates on it.
But yeah, so it's, you know, that's kind of like, you know, we'll go way back. It would be kind of like Art Garfunkel saying, you know, I'm done with Paul Simon. You know, it's like,
hold on, stop. You know, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to shit on your fucking point. But of all the metaphors and all of how, that's the one he chose. Do you know what happened to Garfunkel? Hold on. Do you know what happened to Simon and Garfunkel?
I know.
Garfunkel had a supporting role in a 1970s World War II movie called Catch 22. And after this movie came out, he pulled an Andre 3000 and said, "I'm a big actor now. Who needs Outkast?" So your little metaphor is exactly what fucking happened to them.
Okay.
So choose a different band. But yes, he actually quit the band because he thought he's going to be a big movie star now.
But I guess what I'm saying is that in both scenarios, you have somebody who's wildly talented. I mean, you have to admit, you know, Daryl Hall is a fantastic musician.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but
so is Paul Simon.
Yeah, but they're fucking 80. It's what, 70, 80 now?
Yeah.
They're over
still,
it.
I mean, like, yeah, I guess my point is you don't go to, you know, watch, you know, John Oates' house.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
But that's a little different, though, because that show, he's going to a set. He's got craft services. He's in air conditioning all day. You know, he drives there opposed to going on tour. You either got to fly into the place. As somebody who's worked behind the scene of 7 concerts when I worked at K-Rock, it's not fun. And I can't imagine trying to do that at 60 and 70. Like, I don't need this shit anymore. Simon and Garfunkel was different. They were like 32. So, but yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Well,
But yeah, as far as them being done, it's like.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, they're suing each other over, you know, the catalog, and it's just ridiculous. And
did they not have favorite nations? Were they not getting paid the same for the catalog? Because the only time you'd fight over the catalog is when one person felt they weren't getting enough credit or money.
That's probably John Oates.
Well, exactly, because you know Daryl Hall gets writing credit for most of their catalog.
Well, which one sang that? Which one wrote the lyrics of that Christmas song they did in 1984? Because clearly that's the big breadwinner in their catalog.
I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
You don't remember
about
that video?
I'm an indie music guy.
Oh yeah, they did. They did this real cheesy Hall & Oates like Christmas video, I believe. I'll have to look. But continue.
I'm looking that up now, because.
Go ahead. I'll look it up while you talk.
Okay, so you look that up. I'm going to go back to my story here real quick.
Okay. People listening to this podcast are like, you're fucking kidding me. How do you not remember the Hall & Oates Christmas song? Jingle Bell Rock. You don't remember them doing a cover of Jingle Bell Rock? You have to remember this. Hold on.
I don't specifically remember that.
Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell Rock. Jingle Bells swing, Jingle Bells ring. Snow and
yeah, I remember that video. It's super cheesy. But yeah. I'm watching it. God.
As were a lot of videos back then.
No, this is over the top.
I mean, you look back and, you know, probably the greatest Christmas video ever was Christmas in Hollis. Yeah, Run DMC and the little elf.
Well, that and, of course, the quality video that was the definitive Christmas song of the 1980s, which was Grandma Got Ran Over by a Reindeer.
Yeah, I could do without that just fine. But, all right, so, I'm not even really 100% sure, but what the root of the argument is John Oates wants to sell his, you know, percentage or whatever in the music. And Daryl Hall's like, yeah, you know, if you do that, I'm going to sue you because, you know, that's collectively ours. And I'm sure it comes down to, you know, seeing as how they really haven't done anything in
30 years,
probably the past 20 years,
probably since that Christmas song I played.
Okay. 30. If you're going to kick me in the balls. Okay. You know, 30 years, make me feel old. I get it.
You feel old. I graduated in 1997. So 30 years is like almost to the day I graduated. So I'm feeling old.
I graduated in 1990.
Yeah. But you've already come to grips with that. I'm still in mourning.
Oh, you guys are
old.
God, why am I on this show? Jesus.
Because you got to bring in the younger audience.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm not even hip with my own generation. Jesus Christ.
Just get your passy and hush up for a little bit.
Oh, fuck.
The adults are talking here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Babyface has got to be quiet and sit in the corner, huh?
At the little kid table.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Get your sippy.
Oh my gosh. So basically the crux of the lawsuit is that Daryl says that John selling his portion of it would violate their business agreement that they've had since they started out, you know, in the 70s or whatever. So basically what you've got is a couple of old guys that are pretty much irrelevant, that, you know, are relevant right now because they're trying to sue the, you know, the dog snot out of each other.
One of them's 77 years old. I think the other one's 76, 78. At that age, obviously, we understand if you're not performing, but it's like, are you trying to protect money for your kids or what? Because at this point, why would you care if you guys have a share of music and he wants to sell his portion, but you get to keep your portion. Why do you care? You're dead in fucking 20 years. It's not like you're going to be missing out on 40 years worth of residual income. Let the guy sell his shit. Maybe he's in a hard time. You get, once again, you guys ain't sold music in 40 years. If somebody comes along with a fat check and he's looking at his bill saying, you know what? It would be nice to buy a third home. Then maybe let him.
My take on that is maybe Daryl Hall is like, not ready to let go.
But he's not, he doesn't have to let go. What's the worst that happens? He sells his catalog, right? Someone covers. So okay, Morgan buys your my percentage, right? And you're upset about it. He goes out, he knows people in the music industry, cover songs are all the fucking rage right now. Some young artist wants to cover one of your tracks. they cover your song. Now your original version that you still own 50% of is fucking getting downloaded on iTunes at 99 cents a pop. Wow, your music that hasn't sold in 30 years got an injection of fucking revenue. What's the worst thing that happens? You know what I mean? It's like, once again, you're 77. What are you trying to protect unless all of a sudden you're trying to, you know, my great grandkids won't have enough money. I don't know. It just, it seems petty at that age. I could see if they're actively touring and somebody's wanting to sell and quit, and now you got to fucking buy a replacement, but you're fucking 77 and you haven't toured since 1992. Who cares? Right.
Well, here's the pettiest line in the whole story. It says that one issue in the suit, who gets to sing which old songs? Paul says he doesn't want Oates performing songs he didn't write. So,
okay, that's I could see that. See, there should be some sort of clause like, hey, I'm going to sell these rights. Whoever buys them, he can't go out and record, you know, new versions of them, but if he wants to play them at the concert for good old sake, fine. So, I mean, I get that. If it's going to prevent you from singing a good portion of your catalog at a show, then I get that, you know, especially if you got a, who knows, maybe one of them has a, what do they call that, a regional or regency at, like, fucking in Vegas or a, what do they call it, not a show.
A residency.
A residency, yeah. Maybe one of them has residency in Branson, Missouri, and he's about ready to lose half of fucking 30 minutes out of his concert. I could see going to lawsuit over that, because, you know, now I'm obligated to do a two-hour show, and you just took 45 minutes away from me. What the fuck am I going to do? That could be a big burden.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of interesting, you know, how a couple of petty old dudes were arguing over, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love their music. I just listened to a Deezer playlist of it on the way home from work the other day. So, you know, it's not that I don't enjoy it. I get tired of rich people, you know, bitching about their problems.
Yeah.
First world problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You're old enough to remember. Remember when the environmental movement really came in hard and the cause of the day was to get rid of those pesky paper bags at the grocery store because of all the trees are clear cutting and we need to save the world by switching to plastic bags, and it was a whole big movement. When you go to the grocery store, ask for plastic bags. We got to the point now where you have to ask for paper. No one does anymore unless you have a cat at home. You want to get them one bag to jump into because it's really funny. And so they did that, and then they pushed a whole recycling movement on us. They started doing Captain Planet when we, you know, I was a little outside of that range. I was more for the kids coming up behind me, but they started pushing the whole environmental movement, and then the municipality started pushing out the recycle bins, and you're a real asshole if you don't separate. And then, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, Penn and Teller's Bullshit did an episode on how the recycling, the only thing that actually saves energy and is worthwhile is aluminum cans, but it was on HBO. No one's seen it, so no one paid attention. So a short stint 15 years later, Jane Dell, a former chemical engineer who has spent years telling the inconvenient truth about plastics, quote, "So many people, they see the recycle bin, and they put their plastic in the recycle bin. But the vast majority of the plastics are not recycled. About 48 million tons of plastic waste is generated in the United States each year. Only 5 to 6% is actually recycled, according to the Department of Energy. The rest ends up in the landfill. Thank you for taking all that time to separate all your fucking shit." Dell founded the nonprofit group, The Last Beach Cleanup, to fight plastic pollution. Inside her garage in Southern California, imagine that, is all sorts of plastic, from those little arrows on it that make you think that it can be recycled. But she said, you're being lied to. So this goes on to say, and Penn and Teller pointed this out 15 years ago, that the amount of money that these large municipalities spent on a recycling program, on the blue bins, the pickup, and all that stuff, the infrastructure, they're just going along with the ruse. It's, and when it comes to, like, paper, the only paper that actually gets recycled is spot-free paper. Like, your pizza boxes with the grease, no, that goes in the trash. Like, your paper has to be damn near spotless. It's like, unless you put it in a Walmart bag at three layers deep, tied up, and then put your, that shit goes in the trash too. So we're basically all wasting our time. I just want to spray paint trash on my recycle bin just so I have an extra trash can, because I'm already a trash can short. But it's crazy. Like, people have been calling us alarm for so long, but now it's finally starting to get a little traction on it.
Most of our stuff ends up in Buckingham at the incinerator.
Really? I thought it ended up in that big-ass landfill down on 41. And you know you're coming up on it because so many trash trucks are down there that the entire site of 41 is just covered in fucking trash that blows off their trucks. What are we going to do with that?
Up Zemmel Road up there in North Fort Myers? Zemmel.
Yeah, Mount Port Charlotte.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it does end up there, but a lot of it goes out to Buckingham, and they put it through the incinerator and generate power with it.
Well, those landfills only get so large, and then you have to do something with that property. We could do a artificial ski slope or something on it. I mean, it's pretty tall. We could do something cool with it. I know, like, some towns built
mountaintop property
skiing down the garbage.
I know some cities and towns will build golf courses on them and shit. Because it's just, I mean, you can't build on it because you go down 10 feet and you're poking in the trash. But, you know, you could do something like that on it. I mean, what's the footer for a water slide? 8 feet?
The last apartment I lived in Oregon before I moved here was actually built. Well, there was an apartment complex and a trailer park right next to each other. The apartment complex was built on the old rock quarry, and the trailer park was built on top of the old trash dump. And over the years,
sounds about right. Would,
you know, that what's that?
Said sounds about right. Building a trailer park on a landfill.
Yeah, exactly. So over the years, the streets started to cave in and develop cracks, and the methane from the decomposing garbage would come up through the cracks in the asphalt and catch fire. And yeah, it was a pretty interesting place to live next door to.
Outstanding.
Yeah,
there was actually I heard this word of mouth, but there was a lake in Cape Coral off Veterans Parkway that was so toxic because I guess it used to be something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but they completely closed it off. Like, you couldn't get in, you couldn't be around it. Like,
it's like our own little Zug Island.
Exactly. It was so bad you couldn't go anywhere near it. It took like 35 years or something like that for it to finally be able to, like, you know, life could, like, ducks and shit could land on it and not get sick, or you know what I mean?
Catch yourself a four-eyed bass in there.
That's right. I'd like to go fishing in there. There's really only one way to get in there, but
speaking of fishing, this would probably be said off the air, but fuck it, we're here. Anybody want to go to Ding Darling Saturday morning?
Shit.
On our kayaks?
I'd love to, but I've got a grand opening to go to at my buddy's coffee shop. So.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I have, I believe it's Saturday, a birthday party that I promised my sister I would go to.
Programming note. This is awesome. I'm super excited. Scheduled to appear the first week of May, Danny Boone of Rehab, along with his photographer and co-host of the WRBN, that's the Warner Robins Broadcast Network podcast, Mr. Brad Darnell, will be coming on the show. We're going to take a deep, deep dive on Rehab. I started listening. Yeah. I became aware of Rehab right around 9/11. That's when Southern Discomfort came out. And then my roommate Jason, who passed away a few years ago, he introduced him to me, and I listened to the hell out of that album from 9/11 all the way up until I moved to California. Then when I moved to it was either Rehab or ICP was Untwisted was on heavy rotation, and then all their other albums. And so funny thing is, Carrie and I, when we first started dating, we went to West Palm Beach and saw Rehab play with Authority Zero. I have a picture of everybody in the band except for Danny Boone. He was in the back. And at this point, Brooks Buford had left the band, and a guy named Demon Jones was singing with him. Now, funny thing is, Demon Jones, now everybody knows for his big hat and his beard, he does a lot of country hip hop.
Is it Demon Jones, or I thought it was Denim Jones?
Denim Jones, Demon Jones, however you want to pronounce it. Same guy.
Okay. I didn't know if it was a different guy.
No, same guy. When Brooks Buford left Rehab, he sung all his parts on tour. And then, you know, he does songs with Jelly Roll, and he's huge in his own of himself. But the funny thing is, he has the big beard, big hat. I got a picture of him and I. We both have goatee. So I have a picture of him before the beard. And so, like, half of his audience wouldn't even recognize him because they only know him for having the big, long Duck Dynasty beard. But, yeah, Carrie and I, we go back. And so the fact that they're coming on the show here, I'm super excited for. And so, we're going to start trying to get some more guests on the show. And
our little corner of the world, we got somebody that has
Warner been Robins
in the
own
industry for 30 years.
And was pretty much the go-to studio guy for any country hip-hop group on Average Joe Records, because none of them could sing, they could all rap. So anytime they had a chorus, Danny Boone would come down the hallway, lay down the chorus and the singing on their tracks, and then, you know, Charlie Farley would go back to rapping or whoever. And so, like, any country musician on Country Boy or Average Joe Records, it's basically Danny Boone doing all the singing on all their background tracks. So I want to ask him how he got involved with that, if it was something that he helped co-create, which obviously I could find that information out on Google, but it'd be more interesting to talk to him about it.
Straight from the mouth.
Yeah. I want to ask him what it was like working with Hank Jr. and Larry Wilcox.
When they redid Sitting at the Bar for the 33rd time. You want a good laugh. He did a song on his Fish Grease album, not making fun of it, but he did a song called All They Want to Hear Is Sitting at the Bar. And in the song, he's talking about the third guy, the drunk guy in the third row, you know, the singing, hey, sing that one song. He said, we're only three songs in, but who knows? And talking about how they always save it for the last song of the night, but every time they play a show, you know, you're always that one guy. But yeah, the whole song is talking about how he wishes he could figure out a way to write a million more songs like Sitting at the Bar, because that was the biggest hit they had radio-wise. For me, I could name plenty of hits. But so, yeah.
Well, I think it really gained traction, too, like in the mid-2000s.
And when he actually redid it, that was on the Graffiti of the World album. They remade it.
Yes. Yeah. 2006. Six or seven.
Yeah, after Brooks left the band. But the original version was on Southern Discomfort.
Yeah.
And so, they're going to come on and talk about that. And they have a podcast out of Warner Robins. And so they're going to come on. We're going to talk about that. But, yeah, I'm very interested to hear about all that stuff.
Hell yeah.
Every episode, we seem to do a little period where we all put on our tinfoil hats. Because that's the world we're living in now. Where do you guys believe in cloud seeding? Does it work? Does it not?
What is it?
Cloud seeding.
I don't know what that is. So
it's where they take like aluminum oxide or something and launch it into the clouds to make them generate rain.
Okay.
There's been hypotheses that California's been doing it, trying it. Do you aware of what's going on in Dubai last 24 hours?
I've seen a little bit of stuff
about flooding
coming across the news and stuff like that, but I actually don't really watch the news that much.
Dubai is flooding. The airport has like 3 feet of water everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Really?
The United Arab Emirates today is attempting to dry out after the heaviest rain ever recorded in the desert nation that caused utter chaos. But there are suspicions the horrific flooding in Dubai and elsewhere may have been self-inflicted. The typically scorching UAE heavily relies on cloud seeding, a technique which sees aircraft fire salt flares into the cloud and that speeds up condensation and induces rainfall to provide its groundwater. Flight traffic data analysis by the Associated Press showed one aircraft affiliated with the UAE's cloud seeding efforts flew around the country on Sunday. Meanwhile, Ahmed Habib, the meteorologist from the UAE's National Center of Meteorology, told Bloomberg several cloud seeding sorties were flown in the day before the unprecedented rainfall. Sorry, I can't talk today. Been on the phone all day. As speculation over the cloud seeding grew, the NCM later denied the comments to CNBC. that the operations had not taken place on Tuesday in the hours before the storm, but confirmed that the operation was performed on Sunday and Monday. Scroll, 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 scroll. A lot of photos. Holy fuck. Shocking videos shared on social media showed how cars were filled with water, forcing hundreds of motorists to abandon their vehicles and swim. Not too much rain. To swim to safety. Some vehicles were completely submerged to the top of their roof. So what is that, like 5 feet of fucking water in the desert? Barely.
I don't know. How tall's a Lamborghini Gallardo?
Oh, that's true. I mean, this is the drove by. Yeah, these aren't tundras. some wealthy drivers and luxury motors bragged at floating their way through the carnage, but most saw their vehicles stall as they became stuck in the deluge. Rainwater also poured into the homes, pushing people out of their houses into the streets to seek shelter and higher structure. The horrendous flood swamped the airport and many of the surrounding roads, forcing dozens of flights to be canceled as travelers crammed into the concourse to shelter from the torrential downpour. The country's hereditary rulers offered no overall damage information or injury information of the nation, as some slept in flooded vehicles on Tuesday night. The country's northernmost emirates police said one 70-year-old man died when his vehicle was swept away by flood water. An incredible time-lapse video shared on social media this morning showed how thunderstorms rolled in the sky became black before the city was obscured by blankets of rain. Some commenters argued that the cloud seeding could not be responsible for the floods, with experts estimating the technique can only increase seasonal rainfall by 10 to 30%. Instead, they suggested the abnormal weather system is already headed for the region and blames the brutal flooding on Dubai's poor drainage system. From what I understand, they got like a year's worth of rain in like 8 hours, like in 16 hours, like a tremendous, literally, they got their annual rainfall in 16 hours. And if you Google it, it looks like Katrina photos. There's guys like walking with water up to their chest just from 16 hours worth of rain. It's insane.
With their tigers over their shoulders.
By the end of Tuesday, more than 5.59 inches of rainfall had soaked Dubai over 24 hours. So they almost got 6 inches of water in 24 hours. And we thought our drainage system in Cape Coral sucked.
Yeah, no shit.
I mean, it's a desert, but once like the first 3 feet of soil gets wet, it turns into clay, right?
I would think so, yeah. Wow, that is a lot of water.
Now, more on old man rock and roll stories. We're going to Morgan Long. Morgan?
Oh. Well, I'm guessing we're going to talk about John Cougar Mellencamp.
You had Dickie Betts, Allman Brothers guitarist in here.
Oh, yeah, Dickie Betts. I had that on my list, too. So, the old guys, they're starting to fade away. Dickie Betts died, what, yesterday or today? I can't remember what the story said. But he was 80
April 18th,
years old.
Today.
Okay. So let me pull that one up real quick.
It's called Trial by Fire. We figure you're new to podcasting. We like it when we put you on the spot. So you get that. Are you getting like that warm feeling up your neck and you're feeling a little anxiety, like the world's kind of closing in on you? Like you feel like it's your responsibility to keep this shit show rolling? That's what we want. We want you to love that feeling. We want you to not want to feel that feeling so that you're always prepared to the throw to.
My life's a shit show. So I'm used to keeping it rolling. All right, so Dickie Betts, the singer, songwriter, and guitarist of the Allman Brothers, whose piercing solos, beloved songs, and hell-raising spirit defined the band and Southern rock in general. He died Thursday morning at the age of 80. The cause was cancer and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Betts' manager, David Spiro, confirmed to Rolling Stone. So it sounds to me like it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It just took a really long time to catch up with him. Let's see. It's with profound sadness and heavy hearts that Betts' family announced the peaceful passing of Forrest Richard Dickie Betts. Born December 12th, 1943, died today at the age of 80 years old. The legendary performer, songwriter, band leader, and family patriarch was at his home in Osprey, Florida, surrounded by his family. Dickie was larger than life, and his loss will be felt worldwide.
Now, when he died at 80, can we blame drugs and rock and roll? I mean, that's a fucking good run, right? Now, let's play a fun thought experiment. It's 1978. You, Dickie Betts, and Willie Nelson are backstage blowing one down. And he looked at Dickie Betts and said, "Hey, who dies first, you or Willie Nelson?" Willie's got 10 years on him and still around.
Well, I think that we're probably all going to be gone. And it's going to be Willie and Keith Richards.
Yeah. How old is Keith Richards?
It's going to be up to them to figure out what to do with humanity after we're all gone.
Keith Richards, Willie Nelson, and the Cockroaches.
Yeah.
Oh, that's.
I think they'll outlive the Cockroaches.
Well, Keith Richards is 80, so Willie has 10 years on him.
Yeah.
Willie's winning that race. At least we have his son. Well, his son sings just like him. So, worst case scenario, we'll always have a son.
Sure. I mean, it's worked for, who was it? Sublime.
That's a sad story. You want to talk about putting the fucking cart before the horse. They like finally put out an album. It picks up traction, and then he dies before they put out their first music video. Like, their album just started getting mainstream. Like, by the time it hit the radio and, like, grew into our awareness in Columbus, Ohio, he was already dead. That sucks.
Yeah.
Were you a big Sublime fan?
Not so much.
You kind of look like Bradley if he would have lived past 27. I never realized until I got older how much of an asshole they were by putting their dog in front of those fucking amplifiers on stage. We're like, "Oh, Louie Dog's the best. Woo!" No, that poor dog was fucking deaf because he's fucking deaf. Up on that stage.
Deaf.
Yeah, didn't hear a goddamn
thing. Fucking thing.
Yeah.
"Come here, Lou. Fucking off. Yeah. Off in La La Land."
The dog's high. No, he's fucking deaf. He blew his ears out with fucking amplifiers. You took him to your shows. The dog can't hear a fucking thing.
Well, not to mention the fact that dogs have, their hearing is 8 times what ours is. So
yeah, we remember how bad it sucked the next day after Fort Rock. Imagine being that dog. You thought the ringing in your ears was bad.
For sure.
Look, he's fucking getting down. He's trying to figure out how to get the fuck out of this room. The dog is being blown out by goddamn half stack custom amps, fucking PVs. But,
yeah, he's mildly retarded because his brain's been vibrated into oatmeal.
It's something. I don't know. I look at my beagle and I think, man, if somebody ever tried to do that to my dog, I'd be fucking pissed. Fun fact. Yep. We kind of talked about it at the beginning of the show, but really didn't get too deep into it. We're in the sticker printing business. Here are the What's in Your Head stickers. And so what we're going to do, if you guys haven't done so, please head over to whatsinyourhead.com or d-410.com. Sign up for the Patreon. The Patreon, you order to the gate, you start adding word "the" in front of shit. Sign up for Patreon. We have three plans. One's $1 a month, one's $3.50 a month, one's $7.50 a month. It goes a long way to help us do what we do around here. But we're going to turn you guys into street teams. I'm sending stickers like stacks. Not like three. I'm like sending fucking stacks of stickers to people, which takes time to print up. But I'm going to send it to you guys, the patrons, A, as a thank you for supporting the show monetarily, whether it's $1, $3.50, or $7.50 a month. And B, we don't want you to hoard these stickers. We want you to, keep like 6 of them and then just fucking hand the rest out. Plaster your town. Don't put them on people's cars unsolicited because that's fucking people's paint. And as we learned from Pulp Fiction, only pricks fuck with another man's car. But stop signs and like drive-thrus, have a ball. Anyhow, we're going to send those guys out to you, give them to people who might like the show And then if you're like myself and you've had 2-hour podcast completely deleted by YouTube for a simple 2-second joke that your brother made during COVID, or you find out that your Instagram page is being not shared with anybody who doesn't like your page because you have pictures of World War II reenactors in uniforms, I took the snake from the famous Benjamin Franklin Don't Tread on Me logo. You can see it in the background. And then I used a font, which is very similar to that of the time back in the 1776. And it very proudly says community guideline violator across the top. And actually, community guidelines across the top and violator. And then it says preserve freedom of speech. Any piece of content I've had deleted, removed, shadow banned, none of it has violated any true community guidelines. I don't have pictures of war dead up on my fucking Instagram page, my World War II page. I don't come on here and say racist shit or homophobic stuff or fucking tell people to go do horrible, violent things like catching cities on fires. No, we make fucking jokes and have a good time. But I guess my old man Generation X attitude is just a little too crazy for the new fucking world. And so in much of the way that Gen Xers treat shit, when you tell us we can't do something or you say we're something bad, we fucking wear it on our sleeve. And so, yeah, you can get these stickers here soon, and you can already get shirts and coffee mugs. So if you, too, are a proud community guideline violator, because I do take pride in that, I say to be a community guideline violator, you're actively trying to enforce and preserve freedom of speech. Otherwise, you would just shut up and fucking censor your stuff. It'd be a lot easier, especially if you're trying to get people to see your stuff. But no, we're going the other route. We're like, fuck you, yes. We're community guideline violators because, well, we're not saying anything bad. So if you two are tired of getting your shit deleted, fucking taken down, having your pages threatened to be deleted, head over to d-410.com or whatsinyourhead.com. Click on the merch link. Get yourself a community guideline violator t-shirts. We'll be selling the stickers here soon so you can slap on the back of your car so you two can take pride and tell them the fucking pansies on the internet to fuck off. Back to you guys.
Throwing that one out there.
Yeah, I'm over it. It's just so dumb. It's so dumb. And it's...
Well, what really amazes me now is how, once again, it's kind of like, you know, rage against the machine, fight the power, that kind of stuff. Only thing is now... I'm a middle-aged, well, a little older than middle-aged, I suppose. But, you know, it's like, it's time again to challenge what's being force-fed, you know, much like it was when I was 18. But it's, you know, now I'm on the other side of the fence looking and, you know, I never thought that I would grow up to be a counterculture kind of guy.
I was wearing a grunt style now, shirt on Monday that has George Washington crossing the Delaware, and underneath it says "Rebel Scum."
Because... Yeah, and I mean that's it. I mean now it's like, you know, being a conservative, being a Christian, being a middle aged married guy,
shit, being a liberal, being a Democrat, being an independent who doesn't follow along with what other people tell you to live the lifestyle. That in and of itself is making you an enemy. And you know things are coming to critical mass when even Mike Rowe is doing podcasts that are very similar to the content you hear on Joe Rogan now. Like Mike Rowe's now that's the way I heard it podcast has done a complete 180. And he too is now bringing on journalism and all the same sort of content that Joe Rogan's talking about. Like, hey, we all need to start talking about this shit. And so it's coming to the forefront.
In a while, so.
He's putting them up on YouTube. Go subscribe to The Way I Heard It, the YouTube version. And you'll enjoy it. It's... A lot more people. We're getting to such a critical mass that for the first time in my existence, and I started a website in 2004 called D-410 that had a section on it called Kill Phil, where I had crude photos of Dr. Phil all fucked up that I made in paint shop because I hated Dr. Phil. It's come to the point where even Dr. Phil is now creating his own media network to talk about the shit that's going on that the mainstream media won't talk about. And he's going on Joe Rogan and all these other and podcasts, and I'm like, holy fuck, I completely agree with what Dr. Phil's saying. Because even he's saying, hey, the pedophile shit's getting insane. And so all these people now are finally starting to wake up. And people that formerly you thought were hardcore leftists are starting to come around saying, yeah, we need to start doing some shit around here because it's getting goofy.
So, speaking of pedophiles, did you hear that in California it's only a misdemeanor to buy a 16 or 17 year old for sex?
It's a misdemeanor?
It's a misdemeanor. They tried to make it a felony.
But isn't it a misdemeanor to buy an adult for sex? I think prostitution's illegal. They're all across the board. So I don't even think they're getting. I don't even think they're dinging you for the minor. I think they're just getting you for a hooker in general.
I don't know, but I mean, just the simple fact that they proposed legislation to try to make it a felony, and the legislature's like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that,
dude. It's the whole thing's insane. I mean, it's, you look at the shit going on in New York with the no cash bail and just everything. It's a shit show.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Atlas Shrugged, except our smartest people haven't vanished yet. It's shit's fucking sliding off the cracker and just, you know, let's distract them with banning TikTok and fucking all this other bullshit that has no relevancy for anything. Fun fact, I didn't know this. Someone pointed this out on one of these. Whoa, we got to ban TikTok because the Chinese government owns it and they're stealing their data. Guess who owns Spotify?
Chinese government.
But guess what? Spotify's not eating Meta's lunch, and we don't have a bunch of politicians who own a shitload of stock in Meta. And so when you all have a bunch of money invested in a company that's losing their ass because of TikTok, what do? You pass a bill that says we're either going to ban you or you sell to an American company where we can buy stock too. It's all a fucking money grab. Has nothing to do with data. And has every bit of, hey, we want to buy stock in your fucking business. And we want the ability to the FBI and the CIA coming to you, demanding fucking access to shit and telling you what to do like we do at Facebook. That's all it has to do with. Has nothing to do with data collection. Yeah, they're collecting data. You're just mad because you don't have access to it. If they're an American company, they can collect the same data. And then you get access to it and everything's fucking cool. But yeah, it's a joke. It's all diversionary. It's all insane. We're all going to hell in a handbasket. And that's why you need to log in next week and check us out for another episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. My voice is going hoarse. And so for myself, Morgan Long, and Mike No Use for a Last Name, which I just noticed he updated on his Zoom meeting. That's thank right. you guys so much. And we will talk to you all next week.
This has been a Digital 410 production.